Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Excited to see you today. And also to hop into today's conversation, all things fasting lifestyle. If you are a new listener, welcome into the show. Excited that you have given us a shot to become part of your Fasting for Life family, or having us join you on your fasting, weight loss, and health journey. So appreciate you listening in. If you want to learn more about myself or Tommy, please head back to episode one, give it a listen. We share our story on why we do what we do. Shout out to all the new reviews. We hear you. We're making improvements. We're going to get better. We're going to iron out all the kinks. And we will continue to bring episodes week in and week out for your listening and now viewing pleasure. If you're an OG, appreciate you being on this journey with us. And just loving the fact that you're part of the Fasting for Life family.
Yeah.
So, Tommy, today's conversation, it's going to be around an article, a systematic review that came out of the Journal of Nutrients. And this was back in late of 2023. And it's going to be on the effectiveness of time-restricted eating, aka fasting, early and late, with caloric restriction versus caloric restriction alone for weight loss and health. And this was a meta-analysis. Really cool study. We're going to give you our Fasting for Life kind of nuanced approach to it. And most importantly, we're going to give you something that you can take away today that you can put into your day-to-day life. So we want you to take action now. We don't want you to wait for the motivation monster to show up and be like, hey, you're motivated. Yay, I'll start on Monday. Hey, let's do it after the next life event. No, Fasting for Life is your lifestyle, your fasting. That is part of your lifestyle. It's part of your core values. It's part of your identity. It's part of who you are. And that is how you get results, lose the weight, reverse the diabetes, the blood sugar issues, the fatigue, the brain fog, the hormone imbalances, et cetera, whatever it is that's underlying the weight loss and how the health and weight loss go hand in hand. And then ultimately, we want you to get the weight off and ultimately maintain those changes too, which is, as we know, not to scare everyone, but only about 5% of people do that. And I will say this confidently, that we have a lot of that 5% inside of our listenership, inside of our challenges, inside of our coaching programs, because we've seen it, we've done it, we live it, we walk it out with you. So Tommy, let's hop into the effectiveness of time-restricted eating with caloric restriction versus caloric restriction for weight loss and health, this meta-analysis study.
Yeah, this is really cool because if you think about where we normally come to weight loss and our methodology for it, it usually starts with a built-in caloric restriction. It's like, okay, let me calculate how many calories that I need, shave some off of there. And if I've been doing it for a while, maybe I feel like I need to shave some more off of there because I'm not confident in getting this number, getting the, you know, hitting the 200 or the 300 calorie deficit. Maybe I need to up that a little bit more because the weight loss progress is going slowly. Anybody else ever been there? I've done
it. Eat less, move more.
Done it so many times. So when we start looking at studies that compare time-restricted eating or time-restricted feeding with caloric restriction, it gets really interesting to see where the subjects end up after, you know, a few weeks to maybe a few months, and then the differences between the group. And we want to leverage those differences so that we can, like you said, not have to worry about the motivation monster. I like to think about it as the momentary motivation monster too, because you never know how long it's going to stick around, and that can be part of the problem. So if we can accelerate the progress, then that can be very, very helpful to ultimately getting towards our big, hairy, audacious goals, our, you know, fat loss goals, our disease reversal or health prevention, longevity kind of goals, right?
Yeah. And when we look at this, you know, beginning with the end in mind, right, there's a lot of different ways that you can use some of the stuff Tommy just mentioned or fasting to get you to your end result. But we want to, once we get there, we also want to maintain those changes too.
Absolutely.
Right. There's the roller coaster, right? Lose it, gain it, lose it, gain it. That actually makes the problem more difficult.
Yes.
If you've done it, especially if you've done it more drastically, where we have these changes that occur in terms of our body composition. So right now I'm working on the last few pounds of visceral fat. Mm-hmm. Tommy, you're working on some strength metrics and building some muscle. Yep. To set yourself up from a metabolic standpoint to be more efficient, to be more metabolically active. The muscle cell is the powerhouse, the energy burner, the insulin sensitivity, all of that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of cool stuff that comes out of this study, but then there's also some limitations to it as well because it is a broad brush. They looked at hundreds of studies, and the outline of what they were looking for is to dive a little bit deeper into this concept of TRE, time-restricted eating or fasting. Mm-hmm. So recent studies, and we've done a whole bunch on TRE versus caloric restriction and just TRE alone. January of 2023, we did an episode on 4-hour and 6-hour eating windows. That stands out in my mind, where we talk about the differences and what we saw in terms of not just anthropometric changes, which are the measurement of the body from an external, right? Height, weight, and then extrapolation of BMI, et cetera, waist circumference, height to waist ratio, et cetera. But also looking at the blood work changes that we saw in terms of insulin resistance, you know, inflammatory markers, et cetera, triglycerides, ratios, HDL, triglyceride ratios, all of those lab metrics, liver enzymes, et cetera.
CRP.
The inflammatory markers for sure. So this one took a whole host of different studies, and we'll talk about that later, how that was kind of why we feel we didn't see the changes in a lot of the stuff I just mentioned in terms of those metrics. But what I want to talk about is outline the study, but then this idea that the things that we saw here in this one study, I feel helped to combat the motivation monster, right? If you're looking for a deep dive on habit building, motivation, why willpower versus won't power versus want power, that's episode 125, one of our most downloaded episodes. So you can head back and check that out. But when we're looking at this study, it was interesting that when we first looked at it, I was like, oh man, I can't wait to look. And then it was like, oh man, saw a lot of great changes on the surface in terms of those anthropometric changes, but we didn't see the changes in the blood panel.
Yeah, and that was interesting for sure. But you know, when we see the changes happen on the scale, and the changes were greater, you know, multiple additional pounds lost in the time restricted eating group versus the caloric restriction group, and then also seeing the actual body fat loss be greater in the time restricted eating group as well. So obviously those are positive things, especially for the simplicity of time restricted eating versus actually counting out calories and macros and having to track a whole lot more things. So if I can get better results with a simpler process, I'm going to take that every single time, like sign me up. And then also the fact that you had basically similar results in the blood chemistry, right? Between the two groups. And this is across from like a 2 to a 4 month period, using a wide range of studies, you know, going all the way from, you know, a caloric restriction, a small caloric restriction, all the way up to a very large caloric restriction. So had a 200 calorie deficit over here, all the way up to a 35% calorie deficit over here. So a very wide range, a wide net that was kind of included here.
Yeah. So when we look at the two groups, it was they incorporated data from 7 randomized controlled trials of 9 interventions, 231 people in the time restricted eating group. There were subgroups of that, early versus late, and then the control group, the calorie restriction group, excuse me. So the TRE plus CR group had 231. The CR only group had 227. So a decent data set, mm-hmm. but some of the subset studies only had 11 people, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And to your point, had a small 200 calorie, 10%, all the way up to 35%, right? Mm-hmm. And that TRE plus calorie restriction group was the group that had significant greater reductions, like you mentioned, in body weight, body fat mass, and waist circumference. And we know we've done multiple episodes on height to waist ratio and waist circumference and how that is an indicator of insulin resistance. And the fact insulin resistance then leads to blood sugar imbalances, which then leads to metabolic syndrome, which then leads to cardiometabolic issues, diabetes, et cetera, which is that incredibly increased category of lifestyle disease that we have, even though we're spending trillions of dollars more on it every single year, it's not getting better. And that's what the article mentions in the introduction, is the obesity is a complex health condition, right? Excessive accumulation of body fat due to combination of genetic, environmental, and behavioral factors. And we focus a lot on that behavioral factor because we know that type 2 diabetes and blood pressure and those things can be improved upon, and those markers can be improved upon when you make lifestyle changes. But, you know, pot, meat, kettle, stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? That's the
easier
difficulty.
Easier said than done.
Right, yeah. In the maintaining it, because fasting is so simple in concept, but not easy in walking it out. I was just reading an article the other day from the Medium Daily Digest, where there's a guy who he wrote an article, he was a contributing author, and he was talking about how he tracked his macros and how he lost 20 pounds. And he was like, yeah, but don't track your macros. I was like, oh, that's a mind bleep. Yeah. Right? I was like, wait a minute.
I did it, but don't do it.
Yeah, but don't do it. Because he talked about how he regained the weight because his habits hadn't changed. He was going back to eating those foods, and he didn't want to track the fact that he ate the whole pint of Ben and Jerry's. Right? So we talk about that emotional component, that behavioral component, that lifestyle component. And that's what we talk a lot about in our coaching and our challenges as well. We talk way more about that than the fasting schedule, which is the number one question we get.
Right.
So I want to look at this a little bit differently and come from the standpoint that, yes, they were both similar, the time-restricted eating and the calorie restriction group. The subgroup of TRE, which we've been talking a lot about lately, which is this early time-restricted eating, meaning eating earlier in the day. The billionaire biohacker, Brian Johnson, he doesn't, I'm not saying drink the Kool-Aid, everybody. Okay, I'm looking at the camera, okay? But this dude's crazy. He is like trying to stop, like he tracks his erections during the nighttime.
Oh, wow.
Because that is an indicator of longevity and vitality. And he goes down the route. He's like, I'm healthier than an 18-year-old, right? And I'm like, you're married, right? Like, how does your wife think about this? The dude's doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
But he's taking it to a level that us mere mortals probably are never going to even scratch or sniff.
Sure.
Like even close to that level. So the reason I bring him up is he doesn't eat past 11 o'clock.
11 a.m. Yeah.
11 a.m.
Yeah.
Correct. Because of this, he's found that he tracks everything, right? Like all of the data you could ever possibly want, because it affects his sleep, and sleep is one of his pillars, right? Yeah. Where we need to protect our sleep, prioritize our sleep, and then circadian rhythm, all that kind of stuff. So they talk about in here the timing of food intake, and how some of the TRE studies, in this one per se, that they mentioned that it didn't show those blood lab changes. But we know that in other studies that we've talked about, the time-restricted eating group typically shows a greater change in those lab values and those insulin-resistant insulin sensitivity values. But the limitation on this study was the fact that there was that wide variability in that wide net that they cast to kind of take a look at TRE plus CR or calorie restriction on its own.
Yeah, I mean, to get from nearly 8,000 studies in the literature that they included in their initial analysis, trying to find ones that would meet the criteria, and then basically dwindling those down to seven studies, right?
Right.
And that were ultimately included in this was because they were looking for certain parameters, which would be, time-restricted eating, and it had to be defined in a certain way. The study length had to be at least 2 months, but not greater than 4 months. So they're looking for particular ranges right here. And which I think is important, because you can find really interesting results in the data, but sometimes the, like you mentioned earlier, the number of participants is so small that it's hard to have statistical power. It's hard to draw really good conclusions from those. And then you end up with all of these small studies. So the purpose of a study, like the biggest benefit of a study like this, is to be able to say, even across a lot of different studies and a higher number of participants, these are some of the broad trends that we see coming up over time that are pretty consistent within this type of literature. What the negative side to your point is that we can lose some of the differentiation that happens when that time-restricted eating window, let's say it's earlier in the day versus later in the day, if that's the reason for a beneficial blood marker improvement, then that's going to be lost in a meta-analysis like this.
And, and they did, they looked at, you know, there was the fasting windows were, you know, fasting periods from 14 all the way up to 18 hours at one point as well. Mm-hmm. And they looked at the ETRE, which was food, you know, food intake started before 11.
Yeah.
Right. But then the end variable was depending on the study. And then the ITRE or the LTRE, the late TRE, was the food intake after 11. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they had an MTRE, which was undefined.
Yeah, exactly.
But the ETRE stood out as having better numbers for the anthropometric measurements versus TRE or the calorie restriction group. So I want to talk about the calorie restriction versus fasting, right? Mm-hmm. So fasting inevitably gets you into a calorie restriction. But I want to look at it from the standpoint of area under the curve, and we've done episodes on this specifically, mm-hmm. where we're looking at time with short-term energy in your body. So when you eat, your body breaks down the food, turns it into glucose, and that's your energy. Now your body either needs to burn that, store that, you know, burn it, store it, short-term storage, you know, put it into the fridge or the freezer, or put it into the deep freeze, you know, which is into the fat cell, mm-hmm. right? Because you can store it in three places. It can be in your blood, it can be in your skeletal muscle, short-term energy, about 24 hours in your liver in the form of glycogen, mm-hmm. or it gets put away in the deep freeze under lock and key in your fat cells.
Yeah, in the basement.
Right? Yep. So hard to get in to. The basement, mm-hmm. behind all of the, you know, Christmas decorations and kids' old bikes and all that stuff.
It's
right?
a mess
so,
in there. Yeah, you don't even want to step in there.
Yeah, I think of Macaulay Culkin, and it was a big thing in our house this year where we watched...
Home Alone.
Yeah. And he like goes downstairs and he's like afraid of the furnace, right? And he like, and he runs his signature yell.
Right.
He runs upstairs, right? As he's doing laundry when his family's in Europe or whatever the context of the movie was.
But the bigger context is that there's traps everywhere. So you never want to go down there, you know?
Right. You don't want to go down there, right? So when we're looking at this concept of area under the curve, the time restricted eating or the fasting component is so powerful because it removes those energy stores and those short-term energy supplies, and it forces your body to tap into those long-term energy stores. Because if you are grazing in three meals a day plus snacks, but you do that in an eight-hour window, right, compared to two meals in an eight-hour window, mm-hmm. or even shorter, a four-hour window, right, you're going to have so much less time with elevated short-term energy in your bloodstream, right? Mm-hmm. AKA glucose, but then upstream, the insulin component as well, right? So I'm actually doing a new form of testing coming up where I'm going to be testing my carb tolerance test and looking at my insulin response midday after ingesting 75 grams of carbohydrates to see what we call the functional component of the insulin resistance or the blood sugar imbalance. And this is going to be looking at the function or the metabolic function or how well your body is or how bad it is or how poor it is in terms of being able to flip that switch. Because those processes can get slowed down and become sluggish due to your consistency with your fasting, your sleep, your stress, the timing of your meals, the composition of your meals, and that, you know, are you a gratuitous grazer and you just continually pick even though you're in your window, or are you sitting down intentionally with a meal and getting in your caloric nutrients, and we call it your nutrition window, and then moving on.
Yeah, good point. Because if you go back to how most diets are set up, they're typically set up in smaller meals across the day. So even if there's a caloric deficit built in, they're in a high insulin environment. And so that's problematic in a weird way, because we could be low calorie, high insulin, and that's metabolically, that's a problem. That's much easier to store in the deep freeze than it is to actually burn through, which is kind of counterintuitive. But then the other compounding problem there is that the more weight we have to lose, or the longer we've been trying, or the more diet attempts, we tend to be worse off metabolically, which means more insulin resistant, less insulin sensitive. So when we put ourselves in that sort of environment, it's going to be even less effective than it would have been, let's say, 5 years ago or 10 diets ago, or maybe to our neighbor or our workout buddy or whoever else we might be comparing ourselves to in that moment, which is very frustrating, right? When we have question marks like that, it can lead to lack of confidence and frustration. And that crushes that momentary motivation monster, makes him even more momentary than he would have been.
Yeah. For example, looking at like a metric, you know, something that we don't typically track versus the anthropometric stuff, which I believe is where Tommy is leading this conversation now, which is the thing that keeps the motivation going or keeps you wanting to get results or keeps the process going, this lifestyle adaptation that we talk about, rather than being on the dieting roller coaster or the dieting mindset. You know, a couple of the studies in the subgroups were looking at the time-restricted feeding groups, the early versus the late. And some of those subgroups showed a dramatic improvement in your diastolic blood pressure, right? So we were seeing these changes, but they were such small categories that they weren't grouped into the big overview or the big conclusions from the study. And we've done other we've done other episodes on those where we absolutely will see not just the body weight, the fat mass, the fat-free mass, the waist circumference, but you will see the diastolic and systolic blood pressure, the fasting blood glucose, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, all of those things, total cholesterol, those things will change as well. And it's the consistency piece that connects the two. So I don't know about you, but I'm not checking my blood pressure often. I'm not getting my lab work done, you know, once a week. I'm not Brian Johnson, right? I'm not getting my blood work drawn, like living with an IV
daily,
testing my blood as I'm living my life, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be dismissive. I mean, the guy's doing, he's some really cool stuff, right?
Oh yeah. Just trailblazing, for sure.
Yeah. Just pushing the envelope way past the envelope that I want to be pushed to. but he's doing some really cool stuff. So when we're looking at this, motivation component, I know when the doldrums take place, right? In your consistency muscle wanes, your discipline muscle wanes, the waist circumference, right? The body weight, the body composition changes, the fat-free mass, the fat mass changes. That's the stuff you feel when on a day-to-day basis. When you feel less fluffy, right? When you put the shirt on and you go, huh, I like the way this fits today.
Right. It's not as tight as the last time I put it on.
The belt loops, the jeans, the work clothes, right?
The ring, the wedding ring, the watch.
The wedding ring, the shoes. I remember when I used to love these Nike Metcons when I was, you know, I was a big CrossFitter back in the day doing the open and whatnot. My wife just texted me as we're recording, yeah, crush the work, the, you know, the open workout. I'm like, good for you. Cause I used to do that often. And I used to have this pair of Metcons. And then when I lost all the weight with fasting and then gained some of it back and then lost it again, then gained some of it back, then lost it again. Right. Mm-hmm. Every time I gained a little bit back, it was a little bit less every time. I think I need to go make an addendum to that episode, Tommy, and kind of share that component of it. Cause it's, I remember you put me on the couch. I remember how much it smelled like roses. Because that's not what I recommend. But I was being my own Brian Johnson at a very much scaled back non-billionaire status.
Sure.
Being the guinea pig. So when we're looking at this stuff, that's the stuff that keeps you motivated. Even when the scale doesn't change, the clothes that fit differently, that's body composition stuff, right? That's the stuff that's going to move the needle. So Can caloric restriction do that? I don't know about you, but I've tracked my macros and counted my calories and eat less, move more, and painted my way into an insulin-resistant corner. Mm. There was nothing more disheartening than doing everything right and not seeing the change.
Agreed.
But feeling the change is a lot different.
Yeah, that feeling can actually counteract the scale smacking you in the face. Like if you're doing everything right and then you get smacked by the scale, it's like, ah, man, it can be really deflating. But if then you go put on some clothes and they feel different and you realize you're feeling different, that can counteract that. We don't always get that win when we need it, though, when sometimes we get the loss from the scale, you know, if we're tracking like that.
Don't even add in sleep and stress to that. Actually, to that equation yet.
Yeah. And sleep's an interesting one too, because that's like playing the long game where you can feel the difference in your sleep. And that's a really good thing. But sometimes we don't hold on to it very tightly. You know, like we might be doing the right things and it's leading to better sleep, but we're not necessarily either tracking that or necessarily cognizant of it. So sometimes that we like under leverage sleep benefits sometimes too. So when we're looking at the results of this study and we kind of see what we can do with caloric restriction plus time restricted eating, I wanted to highlight the fact that a lot of the protocols in here going from like 6 to 10 hours worth of an eating window were more of a maintenance style time restricted eating, even though there was a caloric restriction component to it. So again, that's in my mind.
Well, hold on, Tommy. They actually say there was some clinical studies where participants in the TRE group ate ad libitum during that window too.
Okay.
So that truly is, well, how am I going to maintain this beginning with the end in mind where you were going, right?
Yeah. So ad libitum being like, hey, there's no particular foods. It's not set. Go eat what you need, right?
Right.
Eat to satiety, basically.
Right.
Which
is what we want to do anyway.
Yeah. If we can do that and go, hey, you know what? If I'm looking at this, like the long term looks like I don't have to track every calorie, I don't have to track every macro, but at the same time, I can maintain some sort of like parameter that's really helpful, like a time restriction parameter. And I can see from this study right here that maybe that looks like maintaining a little bit lower body fat than I would have maintained otherwise if I wasn't time restricted. That's a really good thing. I have a better body composition during my maintenance period, and it's simpler and more intuitive. Like then I don't really have to worry about that momentary motivation monster. Again, I can go, you know what? Yeah, this is sustainable. I can see myself doing this long term, because if I can see that endpoint, if it seems realistic, then that means I'm more confident while I'm actually doing the process to get to the goal too, which means I can get there faster and I'm more likely to sustain my progress.
And there's one small paragraph in here that I really like, because it says one explanation for the anthropometric changes in the TRE groups, the time restricted eating groups, aka the fasting groups, may be related to the utilization of fatty acids and ketones for energy, because after 6 to 8 hours of fasting, a switch from fat storage to fat utilization occurs. AKA less area under the curve, less short-term energy to burn. Your body's going to tap into those, you know, the Macaulay Culkin furnace basement, and you're going to start burning some of that fat.
Right.
And then they also mention, you know, the relationship between the body weight loss may be related to the internal circadian clock and, you know, timing that up. And we've talked briefly about that in other episodes as well, where changing the time that you eat, playing around with those windows, eating earlier in the day, you know, you don't have to Brian Johnson it and be done at 11 a.m. And get most of your nutrients in the form of pills, potions, or lotions, because he's doing some pretty crazy stuff, freeze-dried, capsule encapsulated, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But that taps into the hormone component for regulating the metabolism, because it's shown to be more peak or more active in the morning, the adiponectin component, which stimulates the fatty acid oxidation and glycolysis that inhibits the fat accumulation while also turning up the furnace on the fat burning, because you don't have those short-term energy stores or the short-term energy supply floating around in your bloodstream or in your skeletal muscle. You've burned through all that and you're tapping to the liver, which then allows you to get into the Macaulay Culkin basement, right, where the long-term fat stores and the long-term calories are hiding, where you can tap into. So really interesting study. Consistency is the key. you know, finding those fasting windows that allow you to be able to feel those changes, those anthropometric changes, right? You're going to see the body weight come down, maybe not daily, but over the course of a week, which means fat burn, fat loss. You're going to feel the waist circumference. You're going to notice your numbers, your certain outfits fit a little differently. For me, it's the shoes. I couldn't believe when I lost the weight and I put those Metcons back on, they didn't make my feet hurt again.
Wow.
I was like, oh my gosh, my feet, I had fat feet.
Yeah, I didn't even know.
How are my feet fat? They didn't look fat. Like, what do you mean? But the shoes literally fit better. So many different variables, so many different paths we can take. But overall, the TRE with the calorie restriction improved those outcomes much more statistically significant when compared to just the calorie restriction. We gave you the insight into why we feel that is. We also, if you want to go back and look at some of the other TRE studies, we do show, those studies do show, because they are more, they are much more compartmentalized and controlled rather than this wide net that they cast for this meta-analysis, in showing that you will also get the changes in fat-free mass, blood pressure, you know, and lipid profiles, insulin resistance, HOMA-IR, CRP, all the stuff we mentioned earlier. So if you're looking to gain some traction, then the best place we can send you is to grab the Blueprint to Fasting for Fat Loss, right, Tommy?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I'm going to encourage you to actually take some of the skills that you may have learned, may not have even realized they were skills, during caloric restriction in the past. Like, if you've been on a diet before, if you've ever tracked anything, there are some skills that you learn, okay? They're not all good, but we can bring some of those into
the skills are good, do. Tommy. I think you're right. The skills are good, but it's the way we think and feel and act with those skills.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we can apply them in like a in a way that doesn't move us in the right direction. So we can flip that around. So grab the blueprint and take some of the skills that you've learned in some of those diets in the past and bring them with you with some good fasting structure. And now you're leveraged, you're set up to likely see better results a little faster than in the past, probably more consistently too, which means that you can continue that momentum, continue moving forward with it. So put the two together and see where it takes you, because I really feel like you have a powerful 1-2 punch right there.
Absolutely. You can find the blueprint in the show notes. You can also find the link to our fasting community on Facebook. We've heard lots of feedback from everyone in the group that it is one of the most encouraging, uplifting. We don't put up with any dogmatic BS. Your journey is different than my journey. We all want to use fasting as the tried and true way to adopt a fasting lifestyle. So come on in, the water's warm. Continue the fasting conversation. Grab the blueprint. Head to the show notes for each of those links. I'd appreciate if you listen in and you want to give us a review. That's always warm welcomed, because that tells the podcast world that we are dropping engaging content and that we're bringing value each and every week. So Tommy, appreciate the conversation as always. Exciting to know that what we're doing is working, and that we're going to continue to flesh out actionable things that you can do day in and day out to adopt this fasting lifestyle once and for all, lose the weight, keep it off for good, and achieve that true health and that quality of life that we all seek and absolutely deserve. So Tommy, appreciate the conversation. We'll talk soon, sir.
Thank you. Bye. So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com. and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.